Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan and Jorgen.
Hello, gentlemen.
We're up and running for the Not a Thing podcast, episode 229, after a little bit of technical fun, but no more than usual. And I love how I'm mentioning it, even though it has absolutely zero impact on the listeners. Zero.
It's not even on the recording.
No.
It's not a problem. It's not a thing.
It's not a thing. I didn't have to edit it out. There's nothing to edit out. It was just like a pre-show kind of glitch. So
it was no cat puke.
No.
That's all I know.
No.
one of the very, very few things that I've actually edited a show for. After 229 plus episodes, you'd think I would have done more editing. Nah.
Nope. No need.
But apparently, one of our listeners, Emily out there, one of our listeners, gave us a mail a few weeks ago, and I only checked our email address this week. Our email address on the website, you'll see it, our HAL900bot, which picks everything up. We couldn't afford the HAL9000 is the story we tell. But the HAL900bot, which catches mail, does a great job of catching mail, but doesn't do a great job of notifying me that that mail is there. So I apologize if you've sent us mail on the HAL@notathingpodcast.com email address. We haven't gotten to it yet, but we should have just caught up. So hopefully the mails that were pertinent have been answered. If you would like to send more in, please feel free to do that. You can also tweet at us at Not a Thing Cast, or find us on Facebook at Not a Thing Podcast. But in any case, we had to do a little bit of editing this week of the website, because Emily found there was a typo in not so much a typo as a broken link in an episode from the distant past, all the way back one of our first shows, episode,
25.
Episode 25, which was kind of about video games a little bit, and one of the links for one of the video games that was on the internet died. So she sent me an updated link. I was able to update that. And so thank you for listener Emily. Maybe we'll have her on the show or something.
That's how you know you have a good podcast. You've been on so long that the links are breaking. We're outlasting the internet.
Yes, absolutely.
Good call.
Well, there's a lot of stuff on the internet that is coming and going. I mean, we talked about it a couple. All right. We talked about it a couple weeks ago about GDPR with the internet, but something that's not quite related to your personal data, but what you can and cannot see on the internet. In the UK, very recently was passed the Digital Economy Act, which has a few other provisions, but the really, really big one that's causing a lot of consternation right now is that it effectively blocks from the internet all sorts of stuff that would normally be considered kind of maybe a little prurient, a little like adult in nature. So essentially anything that they are considering as porn, and their definition is very kind of wide, but they're anything that is considered pornography, they want to just hide from the internet. And so you can only visit those things if you have a pass to visit those things. And the way you get a pass is you have to register with an online database. So you have to, you know, you'd have to say, you know, your name and your IP address or whatever your locality from wherever you're connecting from. So the firewalls can unblock that content for you. And so a lot of people are crying foul, A, because you're blocking parts of the internet, and then B, because in order to see those parts of the internet, you have to register yourself in an online database, which, as we've talked about many times on the show, no one could ever lose or leak or misuse in any way.
No! No, never. That never happens, I've heard.
So, interestingly, this week, the enforcement of that act has not gone in because there have been enough legal challenges around it. But one of the provisions that was made was that you have to be able to sign up for this, for the pass without registering in an online database, which I think is a really interesting provision because it kind of assumes that people might not want to be in a database, which kind of fits along with the GDPR provisions that we were talking about. But the way that you get around it is you have to buy a physical pass, which has a code on it. So you would enter that code and then that becomes your identifier instead of your actual information. But that means that in order for you to get that pass, you have to be verified as a like adult, essentially. So you have to buy this at a place where they will check your ID. And then I forget how much it is. It's something like, I don't think it was very much.
It's 10 pounds.
10 pounds. So that's like $18 or something like that. And then you, but you can buy it from in the article that we found, you can buy it from like a newsstand. So just anywhere where they'll essentially check your ID. The one caveat being that they have to be very thorough about it because they're pretty hefty fines if they misidentify you as an adult or otherwise violate, you know, that law. So, the burden of proof is on the newsstand operators who probably are not going to want to sell that. But at the same time, maybe that becomes the cottage industry, right? Like how in California, all of a sudden, after when medicinal marijuana was like legalized, like every doctor had the, like a shingle out for, you know, oh, you want your medical marijuana recommendation? Here's how you get that. It's maybe you can buy your anonymous porn pass essentially in the UK for. You know, for without you know the heavy degree of checking or whatever.
This just seems like another one of those things that pass through because most of the people this relates to aren't paying attention and they're busy doing other things. But the minute something actually becomes reality, there'll be an uproar, and then things will get reversed fairly soon.
Wait, you mean like Brexit? And when people are confused, like, wait, we can't just freely travel to Europe anymore? They want to charge us?
Yes. I'm of those who believe that Brexit will never actually happen.
Really?
Yeah. I think it will get reversed. They're going to drag it out and drag it out, and then they're going to have another referendum, and they're going to realize that we fucked up. Sorry.
Yeah, it does seem like logistically a nightmare. But I think this law specifically, so the Digital Economy Act, is interesting because it the history of, you know, we take it, I think some people maybe take it for granted despite not fully understanding how free speech works. But I think, you know, that's how it is in the United States. And I think some people see this and see it as a porn thing, but I think hopefully the listeners to this show anyway are seeing it as a, oh yeah, that's a freedom of speech thing. And I think that aspect of it doesn't necessarily land as well in other countries. So it's from a cultural difference perspective, it would be interesting to see if there was that much noise about that aspect of it, not so much the like porn aspect of it, which I think, you know, is in honestly what drew me to the article, right? Of course. But at the same time, it's like, oh, but wait, no, the deeper issue is, are we, you know, is this something that we actually want? Because who's controlling what you can and can't see? Who is who's keeping track of who can and can't see whatever's on the internet? And is that information that needs to be kept and stored and filed away and added to your personal credit score?
I don't, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, not a thing. I think we're going to have to fight extra hard in the United States soon, about that kind of thing. June 11th is the big FCC is going to wipe away net neutrality date unless Congress acts. So we're definitely following that. That's something that we've talked about a lot on this show. So we're not going to go too much more into that, but we are going to move kind of into a similar space. I mean, there was a big set of announcements over the last few couple of weeks. I guess it's just that time of year where companies make big, huge announcements about things. Microsoft is doing theirs this week. Last week was the Google I/O conference, and one of the there were a number of interesting announcements that came out of that about their kind of directions with hardware and the phones that they make and Android as the operating system. There was an announcement about how in some apps they will auto-suggest like finishing words or completing phrases, and they're supposedly adding some features into Gmail that will allow it to complete whole sentences. Just like, here's what you were going to write to this person based on all of the information that they have up to this point, which is a little creepy, a little bit, but maybe not as creepy as the demo that they did about Google Duplex and their Google Assistant. This is kind of, they were pitching it as making up kind of the last mile of connectivity. Like, if you want to have an appointment, you have to, you may be able to do that through a service like OpenTable or Yelp or something like that. But there's some establishments that, you know, that you have to call. And so their idea was to have a assistant call, but the assistant is completely an AI. And in the demo, it calls the they had a demo, they had a couple different demos, but one of them was it calls the hairstylist salon on behalf of a person and negotiates with them to set up a time and kind of haircut, and then the voice on the digital assistant side is, you know, somewhat conversational in how it does it. It even has kind of ums and ahs and pauses to kind of help along the conversation, and it eventually comes down to, you know, setting an appointment time. There was like some misunderstanding about how fancy of a haircut it would be, like if it was cut in style or if it was just regular haircut. And it was a really impressive demo, but it brings up a lot of questions that I think they don't address at all during the during the keynote. I mean, as a demo, it is really a testament to how natural language text-to-speech has gotten, as well as speech recognition and context awareness and the ability to kind of time things, because that was the thing that was most interesting to me, was that it felt from a pacing perspective as a natural kind of thing. I mean, I had a problem just literally today just calling I was calling a tech support line, and for whatever reason there was a delay when I would speak versus when they would hear me. So what would happen is I would pause what I would consider a normal amount of time, and the other side would be hearing me, and then I would, and then they would start talking as I was like coming back into, you know, like I thought the pause was too long, and so they would start talking and I would start talking, and then it would fight. So I think this sounded very, very well paced from that point of view. And it is a demo, so, you know, you have to imagine that there were probably a bunch of bloopers on the way up.
Release the bloopers.
I absolutely think all tech demo bloopers should be a thing. They should release all of those, because if there's anything I enjoy, it's the behind the scenes bloopers for those huge conference like shows. I mean, I've worked some of those huge conference like shows, and when something fails on stage, it's pretty spectacular. But even if it fails, like during the rehearsals and stuff, It can be pretty funny.
Well, it's interesting this week them, you know, releasing this new Google Duplex AI that sounds super realistic. And then you have Google employees resigning and signing petitions against the company because of their contract with the Department of Defense to integrate machine learning with drone footage.
Well, I think...
You want Skynet? Because that's how you get Skynet.
Yeah. Well, I think Google is a massive company. I think we have sort of covered that a little bit. They definitely have their fingers in a lot of pies. And so whatever pies are related to the Google Duplex app probably are not related to whatever they're working on over with the drone technology. But at the same time, I think both kind of suffer from a lack of, I don't know, it's not awareness, because I'm sure they're aware of it. It's more like willful ignorance of a lot of the like kind of ethical concerns that I think people have about the use of artificial intelligence. And especially for this, that it has a lot of practical implications, which aren't even going into the fact that, you know, we're essentially deceiving people that think they're talking to machines or think they're talking to other people, but they're actually talking to machines.
I mean, that's part of the thing that puzzles me is that we're just starting to help social media clean up their absolute clusterfuck of the last election, where people didn't know that they were interacting with bots and that they were replying to, they didn't know who had sent out the materials that they were replying to and arguing with and about and everything. And we're finally now starting to clear up a little bit of that. And the social media companies are beginning to realize that, maybe we should take some initiative and some responsibility here and clean this mess up. And then Google is all like, you know why we did that with like posts and like pictures and words? We are doing it with voice. Yeah. Like, who thought that was a good idea? People are just now beginning to realize when they have been interacting with bots and they don't like it, maybe not introduce a brand new thing that does not alert you to actually being a bot. Who thought this was a good idea?
Well, I think I see some of it because I know that, you know, even it's odd because the computerized voice is initiating the call, right? I mean, I think there's plenty of times when we've all called something and we get, instead of a phone tree, we get the one where we have to say the number or say the thing we're looking for, and it runs through the phone tree in a prompted way, and it's not a human, and you have to press zero or, you know, say operator or whatever it is to actually talk to a person. Yep. From that point of view, I mean, if it were, I think it's interesting because when I speak to one of those kinds of things, I definitely have a different kind of like timbre in my voice, and I regulate the tone. So I try and make it as understandable as possible. And I think if you don't know it's a machine on the other end, you just talk like normal and it may pick it up or it may not. I think that is one of the reasons why the scope of the Duplex, at least so far, seems to be very constrained. It seems to be like setting appointments, which I think is super transactional. So it's small. They can kind of see a limited number of directions where the conversation string will go. But so from a pacing and a speed point of view, it doesn't necessarily slow it down. But at the same time, I think the thing that they missed, and which is weird because Google is a California company, and one of the things that California has going for it with phone conversations is that it requires two-party consent for the recording of any kind of phone conversation. And that's essentially what it's doing, is you're talking to a computer, it's recording that information in order to process it and handle it and all that kind of stuff. And that's why whenever you call any kind of support line, it has to say your call will be recorded, you know, or monitored or recorded.
Right.
And there's no disclaimer. It's just this thing calling you, and then you have to answer this. So I think part of that, it might be willful ignorance that they're, you know, just not informing that the person that there is a computer calling them. They may have been doing it for the demo. It may be that all the demos are staged. I don't know. But I think that aspect of it is going to cause, that's definitely going to cause problems in California. They don't necessarily have to say it's a computer talking, but they have to say that, you know, the thing is being recorded, because the backup, at least from the other articles that I've read, the backup to the AI is that they have people, essentially, if something goes wrong with the conversational flow, rather than the, you know, the bot, like, just hanging up or whatever, I guess they have a, like, manual intervention flag that will wake somebody up who, you know, can listen to the conversation and then kind of type their way out of it. But but that means that the calls are all monitored. And so just from that point of view, I feel it's suspect that it would, you know, it would fly, because I mean, California is you know, not alone in that respect. There are a number of states. I think it's something like it's at least 10 states that require both parties to know if there's a recording that's occurring.
Mm. You hear that, yeah. Michael Cohen? Go to one of those other states.
He might have been in that one of the states. In any case.
He might have.
Do we think this technology is worth it? Like, is the upside better than the potential downsides?
I mean, I believe it's going to be common, and it's going to be how things work, and you're going to be in not too long, probably maybe a year or two, you'll be saying, oh, I need a haircut, and then your phone will be like, I have made an appointment for you this afternoon at 3. Actually, it won't even tell you. It'll just say, you know, next stop, your hairdresser, and your hairdresser will know it, and you'll go there.
Well, but there's enough automatic kinds of things like for that, and you can have an API that can do that, that can do reservations or whatever. But the thing that is like the limited kind of use of this, at least in this case, is that for those businesses that don't do online reservations. And so from that point of view, I think that's really limited. I think they can expand this into a lot more. The thing that I because of the amount of time that I spend on support calls for whatever reason, I guess, or, you know, when things are breaking or whatever, and calling, talking to phone trees, I see that helping that process along will benefit more than, you know, the limited thing that they're using it for. Where I don't want is, because I'm almost fine. I've almost relegated myself to being okay with talking to a computer. What I don't want is if the computer is trying to, I'm fine with a computer impersonating a person. I'm not fine with it impersonating a specific person. And that's where I think, you know, the line gets dicey, because like, if you think that this is a living, breathing person on the other end, then you treat things differently. And there's not a way to, I mean, if there's not even a way to think about that. And then when you start weaving in voice synthesis and how to make voices sound like other things, and then it starts to get kind of weird and broken for me. Like, is this actually this person calling me, or is this someone like a computer voice that sounds like this person calling me, you know?
Or you could mesh that with that deepfake technology where it can replicate video.
Right.
And then you're imitating like everything. Yeah. Like you have a fake video call with somebody.
Yeah.
A couple of years from now, we won't even have to do this podcast ourselves, because we'll have software that can imitate our voices, and AI will know the kind of topics and comments, and you can probably adjust my snarky filter and sarcasm filter, and we can just go about doing other stuff.
It just feels like we're accelerating our own obsolescence.
Yeah.
As yes. a species.
Yes.
I don't like that.
And no, I agree. So on that light note.
How about some drugs?
Yeah. Yes. Well, that is something that we will have to deal with ourselves, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, at least so far. A number of there was an article this week of how a lot of non-traditional remedies, shall we say, are being posed for very specific problems that have not had good medicines being developed around them. Kind of medical researchers and pharmaceutical researchers are looking into different methodologies for and different avenues for you know, solutions to those problems. So interestingly, this article brings up ketamine, cannabis, and psilocybin, or magic mushrooms, and is and kind of posited those in very, very limited quantities, microdosing kind of quantities, as ways to stem different kinds of ailments. And I think that that aspect of it is, I mean, from one degree, interesting from a, like, oh, so maybe drugs aren't bad kind of point of view, which I, you know, the part of me does say maybe, you know, having some amount of research around them does make sense, rather than the schedules, the schedule number kind of methodology, where it was like, if it's a schedule one drug, then it has no applications whatsoever and should be just illegal. And then schedule two, I think, has some applications, etc., things like that. I think looking at those, especially in the cases where there isn't a much clearer alternative, I think helps rather than harms, or helps more than it harms. And that's part of it too, right? So kind of like what we were talking about with the last topic, is like looking at it from a more holistic point of view rather than something that is black or white, because it's rarely that in the world. Looking at it from a kind of a more continuum kind of point of view, you know, if this person is really in this bad state and microdosing them with psilocybin helps them, I feel like that is a thing and should be a thing.
Well, it's nice to have research and science based on actual science rather than what seems like someone throwing darts at a board.
Yeah.
And making decisions.
Or even if it's darts at a board, you can still do darts at a board and go, oh, well, let me use the scientific method to verify if that's a real thing or not. And be able to do it without fear of prosecution, because you know, you're doing it for legitimately medical research kinds of things.
Right. Because if you are going to, down the line, throw some of those darts onto your own head, then you would like someone else to have done it in a clinical way first.
Yeah.
Too wide metaphor? Too far?
No? The Not a Thing podcast does not advocate using darts as for medical research. But
yeah, hashtag drugs, not darts.
but yeah, I think
only in the rarest of instances of acupuncture are darts.
I guess, right, you could have drug darts, right? Like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we'll save that for another show, maybe. But like, just taking what is it? CBD oil, cannabidol, you know, from the equation, from the three drugs they go through, you know, isolating that and recognizing that the psychoactive elements from traditional cannabis is pretty much THC, and then the other compounds in it do have medicinal properties. And you know, when people are saying medicinal marijuana, the medicinal aspect of it partially is the, is the psychoactive compounds, and partially, probably the majority, is the cannabidiol, which can be completely extracted separately. And that has been shown to help in pain regulation and anxiety reduction. In a very specific case, or for a number of folks, the reduction in the occurrence of seizures, which are not still well known, you know, the causes of and things like that. And I think using it as a like vector for an experimentation, I think is a good thing in, you know, in a medical context. And it's so and it shows that, you know, just the blanket you know, walling off of this is bad, you know, it, you know, doesn't, you know, hampers that kind of research.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Also,
so going,
a thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Going from drugs to a more natural high.
Although most of the drugs that we were talking about were naturally formulated.
true. Yes, but you get my gist.
Yeah,
you get the wave of what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. So I've been reading a lot about Kelly Slater's secret wave creator in the middle of the desert, which is basically Kelly Slater is probably the world's most famous surfer. And he has
a video game named after him, you know.
Yeah, and he's won the world championships or one of them more times than anyone else. And I think he's around my age, mid-40s, and he's still doing very well, and he's like super fit. Well, I read an article once about his diet, and it was bananas. Like, not eating bananas, but like mainly eating seaweed and molecules. And I was very impressed by how buff he was for only eating that. But anyhow, he's been involved in developing this wave machine in the San Joaquin Valley, together with a bunch of scientists, and their goal is to mimic Mother Nature and create a wave machine in a pool away from the ocean, so that they can arrange competitions there, and you can basically surf anywhere, and you can build these things all over the world. And it's basically one long pool that has a hydrofoil machine on like a subway looking wagon on the side, and it's on cables, so it pulls this hydrofoil up along a track, pushing the water to form as well. And then they've designed the bottom of the pool so that it reacts carefully to the bottom, so it really works like a lagoon. So there's like tons of physics and thinking around the waves and how the water moves and behaves and everything. And it's apparently super cool. They had the first competition and opened it to the public 2 weeks ago, because there's been a lot of secrecy and it's been guarded very, very heavily. But apparently it works beautifully and it is super cool. And there was Sean White was there and participated, and the people are giving it lots of love, and this is amazing. And they're talking about how it's unbelievable how it can create the same waves so many times and copies it. And now we can have competitions all year round, and it's not seasonal anymore, and la-di-da. And part of me is like, that's cool that, you know, they've mimicked that stuff. And the other part of me, and I've never been a big surfer. I enjoy looking at people surfing, but I've never been a big surfer myself. But I respect surfing for the man versus nature aspect of it, that you never entirely know the wave that is coming and that you have to adjust to the unpredictability of the wave that is coming, and you have to lay out there in the water on your board and wait for the waves to come, and how that's part of like the conquering of the waves. Like, I watched Point Break and I loved Point Break and I just and You're I just wrong. Feel I'm just baffled that Kelly Slater, who like in interviews comes across as this guy who lives on seaweed and has conquered all the waves all over the world, and is like maybe not a stretch, a little bit of the Patrick Swayze character in that movie is the guy who is leading this and has been working on developing this thing for years, which is just the machine-like copying of every wave is the same and it happens in the pool in the desert. Like, I'm baffled, and I imagine that it's gonna lead to a ton of probably a real split in the surfing community among those who think this is really cool and would like to make a ton of money because now they can have these competitions and get sponsors all over the world, and the other part who's like, "F that, I'm gonna be on the beach because that's where the surfing happens." I think it's a very, very interesting situation they've created for themselves.
It looks like there's a lot of money on the television side of things and potentially turning surfing into a televisable sport.
Yes.
With the consistency of the waves, and they can just plan it.
And it seems like the waves don't have to necessarily be as consistent as they were showing it. I mean, I only watched two videos, but both videos, the wave is like this endless perfect pipeline that does not vary at all. So that he's like, he dips in under the curl of the wave and is just sitting there and he's just like, yeah, I got it. I mean, the only thing that pulls him out of it essentially is probably that he's in a squat so long that, you know, your quads like, you know, burn up a little bit, so you gotta kind of stand up to stretch out of it. But it does reduce the you're right, it kind of does remove a lot of the predictability, it removes a lot of the unpredictability of how kind of the waves can go. At the same time, I think it does have a lot of utility from a, like, I just want to ride waves and I don't live anywhere near the water.
Yes. And those people should be allowed to, I mean, snowboarding and similar sports on snow started happening when people needed to get around in the winter. So maybe not so much snowboarding, but at least skiing. And then after a while, they started building artificial, and then they started making artificial snow. And that has happened in the other sports. And for skateboarding, they build, it started as just street skating, but they build ramps. So it works for them in that sense. But I don't know. It still feels fishy, a little bit on the fishy side.
If Elon Musk is the Tony Stark of our podcast, can we say Kelly Slater's the Aquaman?
Done. Yes. Sure. Yes. Yes, we may.
We can do that. We can do that. I think that's also a good point to jump off and maybe, you know, jump into the spoiler land end of the pool. For the show, I think we've been holding on to this topic for a while because I think we actually all saw the movie, like, not before we posted the last show, but maybe just before posting the last show, between when we recorded and when we posted the last show, is we all three of us saw the Avengers Infinity War, but we couldn't talk about it until just now, essentially. So now we're going to talk about Infinity War. If you have not seen it, well, that's interesting.
Goodbye.
Because I may have a dissenting opinion. I suspect I might about an aspect of the movie. And part of me is like, if you haven't seen it yet, it might be that you weren't going to see it anyway. But at the same time, if you haven't seen it yet, but you do want to see it, I would almost wait to see what comes after this. Almost. I don't know. I feel conflicted about it because...
That's cheating.
Because at the end of the movie, I felt that it was a good movie, but I knew that, all right, well, this is part... you know, insert number of insert larger number.
Well, I mean, it was originally announced as a two-part thing. It was Infinity War Part 1 and Infinity War Part 2.
Right. And then not too long ago, they dropped the numbering So it was just listed as Infinity War. I don't think they necessarily changed how that would go. And so that has some interesting things. Like the thing that I think Brendan, you'd mentioned when we were texting about it, was that it doesn't fit the template of a lot of the movies, which was probably my major complaint about many of the Marvel movies, is that there is that kind of rising action, falling action, all that kind of stuff. It just really locked in and dialed in, you know, and the variants of that where, you know, like Thor Ragnarok, where, you know, the humor was ramped up and used to kind of push the plot into, you know, kind of different directions, I thought was good. But this movie has aspects of that, but the template timing is all out of whack. And I'm wondering if that's because really there's another movie that needs to go along with it.
I think they changed it only for marketing, because exactly what you said, maybe you should wait for the next one. If someone sees, oh, well, this is part one and part two, then I'll watch part one on DVD and then I'll go see, wait for two so I can watch them together. Hmm. They want to maximize their box office.
Sure.
They want to get everybody out there. And it's worked. It's made $1.6 billion.
Yeah, I ended up not using our practically but not really a sponsor movie pass to watch it. I ended up paying full price because I couldn't get I couldn't get into a different showing because of timing from where I was. I ended up buying the Dolby seats at a theater, which I am hilariously impressed by. I'm gonna have to remember that for movies that I want to see very, very big.
Dolby Atmos. You're saying they are a thing?
Yes. Dolby Atmos is a thing. 11.2 speakers. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of wild. It's the best of the baby IMAXs. Let's put it that way.
Because I actually used MoviePass to see it and paid to go see it again because MoviePass no longer lets you see the same movie twice.
Right. Right. So interesting. So you saw it twice. I mean, that's an investment of time, first of all, because it's a long
movie. It is.
It doesn't really feel that.
I was very impressed with how it took me forever to get to see it, just because it was 2.5 hours, and I rarely have that much time in one window. But I was very impressed with how it didn't feel like it was 2.5 hours. It really, and as you know, I'm like 30% into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I knew all of the characters, but I didn't have a thoroughly good understanding of everything that was happening and all of the little in jokes and stuff like that. I would not catch.
You honestly didn't need it, I think.
No, no, I was very impressed with that part as well.
Yeah.
Like I don't think someone coming in completely green would get everything and love it as much, but someone who had done a little research, like I have, and seen some of the movies before, enjoyed it a lot.
But it is the obviously leanest 2.5 hour movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, yes.
Like there was no fat on that thing. Like what scene are you going to cut? There, none of them.
That's true.
It was never boring.
That's true.
And it was never boring.
I blame Hawkeye.
There was never too much.
I'm sorry. That's a really
did he die in the four?
No.
Last
just
movie?
Just because he wasn't in the movie, there was so much like
he'll be in the next one.
Yeah, right. And a lot of people had complained about why is this scene so long with Hawkeye, and it's like because they have to humanize the characters. Sorry, everybody. This is how storytelling works when you have superheroes that are all powerful and then suddenly are not all powerful. You have to take a moment. But in any
case, since we are in spoiler territory, I feel safe saying everybody who died is not dead.
Will come back.
Because they're all the people who are under contract for sequels.
Well, I mean, not even going from that point of view, which I think is a little, you know, that's knowing too much about the mechanics of movies and how timelines work and the fact that they announce movies way ahead of time and and things like that. Just knowing from the source material, like, oh yeah, people don't die in movies necessarily.
No.
And especially I think at this,
a couple people are dead.
At this volume, that's the thing.
Right. Yeah, half the universe.
Half the universe.
Literally half the universe. Like, you can't really do that, can you? I'm pretty sure you can.
I mean, they did.
I'm very curious to see how they do it, because they've obviously done it. But to go from there to changing their mind and redoing that and building it back up again in a way that's plausible and interesting and not just look at my hand and now look at my other hand. Fool, you idiots.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be...
That aspect of it is something that comics have struggled with forever, right? Like the, the stakes in comic books are like, Superman died. No, not really. You know, he's fine. I don't know how many times they've reinvented Spider-Man, you know, and they've done that again in movies too, apparently.
Yes.
But I think doing, you know, having the stakes be as real as they seem when you watch the movie, I think was very good up until the very end. Then you're like, no, this isn't how they can do this. I don't think they can do this. Like Loki dying, that sucked.
I think that's going to be permanent. I don't think they're bringing
it.
Yeah.
Same with Heimdall and Loki, I think, are done for good.
Yeah. Well, Heimdall, I mean, he has to be James Bond now, right?
Oh.
But I thought that was a great move on their part, like raising the stakes right at the beginning. It's like, oh, here's two beloved characters.
Before the credits.
They're dead.
Yeah, before the title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a strong cold open.
Yeah. And I think that was and it was good. You get the sense right away of like, oh, this is bad. This is not your normal, like, these are bad kinds of situations. And I think the tone was something they had to really be careful about, because like when the Guardians are on, it's a completely different, it's not a completely different tone. It is a different tone, but it's not so stark, like the difference that it could have been, I think. They did a really good job of balancing it, because even though it is really funny with you know, Rocket and everybody, it's like, oh no, this is still a little like messed up. Like there's still an aspect of this that is not just comic relief, essentially.
Mm.
This is the first superhero movie I watched that I had genuine fear for the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like I when Scarlet Witch and Vision are on the run, I was like, they could kill off either of these characters. I would believe it. Like they actually had stakes. It wasn't like, oh well, they'll be fine. They're the heroes.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's because they do set the tone, you know, right away. I think that's good for them that they can do that. But I think for them to move on, you know, assuming they are able to kind of wrap that up in a nice way, in a way that doesn't feel cheap, they have to tell stories in a different way for, you know, from this point on, you know, like you can't have the universe ending conflict every episode.
Right.
No,
but I also think that as much as they're going to undo things and bring people back, this is all also setting up to pull the rug out in the next movie when they actually kill main characters.
Hmm.
Like, it's very probable that Tony Stark dies in the next movie, or Captain America dies in the next movie. Like, that's totally plausible.
Yeah.
So we may, yeah, cool, we got these other half of these characters back, but maybe everybody who survived is set up to die.
That would be pretty brutal. Hmm.
That's what I think they're going to do.
And I think, you know, from and it's unfortunate that I'm looking at it from this way, but it's like from a like kind of movie contractual point of view, yeah, you got to not, you can't keep these guys around too long because then they get too expensive.
Well, and I mean, yeah. They at the end, they tease Captain Marvel, who in the comics is more powerful than any Avenger we've met, except maybe Thor. or the Hulk. And even then, she has more powers than they do. So, like, yeah, that you can take an Iron Man off the table. You can take Captain America off the table if you're bringing in that powerful.
Yeah.
She, did you say? Yeah. Captain Marvel's a chick?
Yes.
Yes.
Nice. Well, there have been a number of incarnations, but the big one is Carol Danvers.
Hmm. Yes. Brie Larson is playing Captain Marvel.
Oh, yes, please. Down for that.
On board. Okay.
Which is going to be the movie before the next Avengers movie comes out.
Yeah.
So that comes out later this year then?
It's the beginning of next year. It's like March.
Yeah, because Ant-Man.
We get Ant-Man and the Wasp this year.
Yeah.
And then next year we get Captain Marvel and then Avengers. But Captain Marvel's set in the 90s. So we'll get her backstory.
Right.
Mm.
Which I think
Kevin Feige, he doesn't sleep much, does he?
No, Feige we trust.
Yeah. He earns his money.
His films have made $16 billion.
Yeah. I would also like to say I thought the effects were absolutely awesome in this movie. There's one scene where the guy, Thanos, uses the, what was it, the reality stone or the perception of reality?
Yeah.
Where he messes with a couple of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I thought the effects in that scene, what he does to the characters, was absolutely beautifully done.
And that's straight out of the comic.
Oh, nice!
That effect that he uses is actually in the comic book.
They use. Awesome. I think they cherry picked the right stuff out of the Infinity War comic. Or it's not even the Infinity War comic; it's the Infinity Gauntlet. Set of comics. Infinity War is like after what happens with these, where they almost kind of give Thanos a like redemptive arc, which I don't know if it doesn't quite work. But in the comic, he's not doing this as his kind of like his motivation isn't to kind of bring, I almost said humanity, but it's not humanity. It's just life. Like give life a reason to kind of claw its way back, essentially, was his idea in the movie. In the comic, he's killing people to kind of get to appease Lady Death. Like the embodiment of death is a character in the comic books. And I think that aspect of it, it's like, it's less, not so much.
Okay. You know what I did like?
Yeah.
The best cameo that they've done.
Huh.
Red Skull coming back. I shouted out loud when he showed up on screen. I was so happy.
That was such a, like, it took me a little bit to kind of reconcile that in my brain because I did not remember the end of Captain America.
He gets zapped by the space stone.
Yeah, right.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So that they pulled that back 8 years later. Well, here we're paying off this thing from our second movie,
right? Although that's it great. Wasn't. I can't remember his name.
It's not. Hugo Weaving.
Yeah, it's not Hugo Weaving. It's Oh shoot, he's from The Walking Dead. I don't remember his name. That's fine. It'll come to me later. He does impressions, so that makes sense.
I thought he sounded like Werner Herzog. Which and anything we get more of his voice, I'm okay with.
I'm down with that.
Yeah, but I enjoyed it. I liked it. I think it made a better movie than the last Avengers movie.
Age of Ultron?
Age of Ultron, yes.
It's way better than Age of Ultron.
Way better than Age of Ultron, for sure.
And it's really the first two acts of the movie.
Yeah.
That means the whole next movie should be the third act, triumphant, ass-kicking. I want that.
It could be okay. I'm not a fan of splitting the movies up that way. I mean, this needed it because there was so much more to tell and do. And I still felt like some characters didn't get enough screen time.
I feel like this movie was my reward of watching for the previous 18 movies or whatever it is. Like I sat through all those movies multiple times, and I felt like they made this movie for the fans like me.
Okay, yeah. But did you really need to see Iron Man 3 for this?
I liked Iron Man 3. I didn't need to see Iron Man 2.
Yeah, yeah, Iron Man 2 was not great.
I didn't need to see, you know, Thor 1 or 2.
I like Thor 1 just from the world-building aspect. Thor 2 is good for Loki, but not really. And then Thor 3 is wonderful.
Yeah.
Thor Ragnarok. But, like, it was really fun going through the movies in my head Jürgen, when you were asking, like, well, okay, which ones do I need to see ahead of Infinity War?
Yes.
So how did you do? What did you think?
No, I only got around to watching the Guardians of the Galaxy and the first Avengers, was it?
Captain America?
No. Just the Avengers.
Oh. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. So I did not. Doctor Strange was one that I had intended to watch, just because that was one of the ones you recommended. But I will still probably catch up with that later. But I, like I said, I didn't feel like I was thrown off at any point in the movie. I was able to follow through with most of the stuff just because I also pay attention to pop culture. I know the characters from outside the movie universe as well.
Yeah, and I think they did a good, like I said, they did a good job of pacing it with everybody. I mean, I would have loved to have seen more Captain America screen time, and
I think we'll get that in the next one.
Exactly. If I have a complaint, and I always have like one, if I have a complaint, it's that it doesn't matter how many powers you have. It still comes down to who can punch you the hardest.
Yes.
I'm fine with that. Because that person is Thor, and he kicked everyone's ass.
Isn't it Hulk?
Well, Hulk didn't even show up.
Yeah, true. Not after the beginning. True.
He's right. Retired.
He was like, no, don't want to come out.
I think my favorite scene in all of the the Marvel movies so far is
I wasn't prepared for that. Okay, hold on.
is when Hulk beats Loki's ass. when he just grabs him and does his like just like slamming him holding his feet. There's just something so vicious and animalistic in how he treats Loki like that, and it's I don't remember which movie it is, but it's in the and then it's the fight Loki.
Yeah.
And they paid that off perfectly in Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ragnarok when he gets smashed.
Yeah.
Essentially, and he's like, yes, that's what that's like.
Oh, that's good. Yes, no, I approve. The Avengers is, if there was any doubt, a thing.
They're really giving those Fast and Furious movies a run for their money.
Of which I have still never seen any.
Yeah, I think at this point you may not want to. I don't know.
It's about family.
Although I've seen every Fast and the Furious movie since 5 in D-Box. I think that's the only way to see them.
It's kind of the best thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll catch you up. We'll catch you up.
Good. Thank you. Or not thank you. We shall see.
Excellent. Well, with that, I think that is the end of a show for another couple weeks. We're going to be recording probably not before Memorial Day, but hopefully soon. If you would like to be part of a recording, either by contributing a story or if you'd like to be a guest on the Not a Thing podcast, we would love to have a guest. Don't be daunted by the fact that there are three of us now on this side of the microphone. We'll be sure to make it nice and welcoming for you. So please find us on Twitter at Not a Thing Cast. Find us on the internets at notathingpodcast.com, on Facebook. If you'd like to write us, Hal at notathingpodcast.com, we'll take your mails and maybe let me know this time so I'll be able to write back appropriately. Thanks again to Emily and gentlemen, I will talk to you in a little bit.
Thank you very much.
Till next time.